All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Just introduced Damien to Bout About It in the commercial break. Are you now Bout About It?
Hey, lock it in, bro. Again, like I was young for Master P. I knew Lil Romeo before I knew who Master P was.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I was just young.
Oh, my goodness.
I hate that for you.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, no, I hate that you had to go through that.
I got Lil Romeo.
No Limit Soldiers.
That's a little bit on you, though.
And, like, my parents would tell me, you realize that's Master P, son. I'm like, who's Master P? Like, who's, okay.
Get you an episode of Cribs, figure out who Master P is. Yeah, gold-plated sinks.
Then I realized, like, he's probably one of the best businessmen to ever breathe on a microphone, because he bowed it. He bowed it, bowed it.
He's about ripping off his crew.
Well, yeah,
that happened.
Allegedly.
But, yeah, technically, maybe. Don't really know for certain.
No Limit Soldier.
I tell you who's bad about is Benjamin Franklin. Well, the punctual plumber, at least, because they service residential and commercial projects. No job too big or too small. They answer the phone 24 hours a day. A real person answers the phone 24 hours a day. Everybody licensed. Multiple master plumbers on staff. And that office staff has been working together for over 15 years. So Lee, Chris, Susan, Jeff, they know exactly what you're going to need, who to send, and they're going to know what time they're going to be there. Because when they give you that window of when that plumber's going to arrive at your home for this project, they offer a major discount or no charge when they're late outside that time frame. So if there's any delay, it's you, Benjamin Franklin, the punctual plumber, will play. Just a couple of reasons, G-Mac, that Benjamin Franklin, the punctual plumber, is bad about it.
Yeah, and some of the other reasons at the Benjamin Franklin Club. For $8 a month, you get the service agreement that will allow you to get them to come out to your house once annually, check your water heater, check everything in your house, make sure that there's no issues whatsoever, just a complete comprehensive review. Preventative maintenance in this world is a huge deal. And then if you have an issue that arises because of that inspection, they're going to give you 15% off any diagnostic or repair. That will pay for itself in no time whatsoever. That's why I'm a member of the Benjamin Franklin Club. I think you need to join as well. So give them a shout. You can check them out online at BenjaminFranklinPlumbing.com.
All right, what's our biggest concern with every SEC football team heading into this season? Now, I want to flip this around also because I think it's very easy when we break down teams and we look at the schedule or starters returning or who's back or this transfer portal kid or they filled this void or they have good depth here. To say, well, I'm worried about this, or this is a concern, or this is a question mark. But I also think a lot of times we fail to look at the other side, at least with certain teams, and just say, well, this is what I like about this team. So I also want to give you guys what we like most about each and every team. You want to chime in with yours? 800-239-9569, 800-239-WJOX. That gets you on the Bud Light Hotline. You pick any SEC team you want. You can give us your biggest concern. You can give us what you're most confident with. You can go multiple teams if you like. At Mac and Cube, you can tweet into the show there. So we will start with Alabama. Your biggest concern, G-Mac, about the Alabama Crimson Tide heading into this season?
Same thing as last year. It's the offensive line. Because Bryce is amazing and did a great job last year between a group that was occasionally leaky. They weren't bad all the time. I think they're a little bit misrepresented. But the performance against Texas A&M is the one that stands out in everybody's mind. That group completely got beat up across right to left, including the left tackle. Everybody got beat up and pushed around that night. That was a big issue. Now you're expecting some young guys to step into some key roles. Tyler Steen might be decent. I don't know. But he's likely going to lock down one of those spots. J.C. Latham, probably going to lock down one of those spots. Seth McLaughlin's probably going to be solid in the middle. TBD on what it's going to look like at guard. Might be a young guy that steps up in there at one of the guard spots, or they could go with the same two that were in there last year. So the offensive line is still of the utmost concern, I think, and in all points Bolton. On a group, it's really pretty dang good across the board. I mean, shoot, man, you look at every position that Alabama has is in pretty good shape. I think the receivers will be fine. That would be the second biggest concern, but I think they'll be okay. Burton's played a lot. Harrell's played a lot. They still have, I think, a couple young guys that are poised to break out. I think Latu will be fine. All the receivers will be just fine. I'm not concerned about that. I think Bryce can make them better. But the offensive line, there's only so much you can do as a quarterback if your O-line's a little leaky, and that would be something that would keep me up at night if I were Nick Saban right now.
I'm going to go with a position that you just mentioned, and it's because the guy you just mentioned is already banged up, and it's going to be tight end. And I think it is a massive misperception that this team doesn't use multiple tight ends. If you really study in the last 2-3 years, they have been a 2-tight-end team often. They have sometimes been a 3-tight-end team. And more times than not, there's going to be a tight end on the field. And the fact that Cam Watu, who I love and I think is fantastic, is already a little bit dinged up, especially with what I believe is dinged up, is not something that's always easily overcome, sometimes can nag and carry on throughout the course of a year. I just don't know a ton about what's behind him, G-Mac. I don't know a ton about what's next. I don't Robbie Oates or Elijah Brown or Danny Lewis. I don't know who's going to be able to step in and give you what you need from that spot. And because the receiver position may be down a few numbers versus what we've seen the last few years, does that push Alabama to go in more multi-back? We had Coach Saban on the show, and he said that, yes, something that they could definitely utilize. He talked about how difficult that was to defend. Easily could be that, especially with Gibbs and his flexibility and what he's able to do in different ways. But I'm concerned about that tight end position. And I think that also tells you something about where Alabama is as a team, that I can just take a position where if the starter comes back and is healthy, whether that's week 1, week 4, whatever, they're going to be just fine. But that kind of shows you where Alabama is right now, that is my biggest concern about this football team. Damian, what?
And Latu's, I'm with you, dude. I think Latu is a very underappreciated piece of this offense. Because Robbie Oates, he's a fine player. But he's not going to be an impactful piece, I don't think, as far as stretching the field. Not that Latu is a burner by any stretch, but they have now really relied on that position being multiple and being able to use them in nub sets and split sets and things like that. That's a very important piece to what they've done in the last 5 or 6 years. So them not having a guy that can contribute in that way would be problematic for sure.
For me, I'm going to the defensive side of the ball. I'm looking at the defensive line because, you know, we're so used to having, we talked about it a lot last year, that Alabama usually just has that guy. Do we see DJ Dale finally make that next step? Do we look at, I mean, we know what Will Anderson does off the edge, no Dallas Turner on the edge. Can that interior of the defensive line truly make that next jump in this Pete Golden defense? I feel as though that's probably one of the bigger question marks defensively, because like I can agree with both of y'all as far as talking about the tight ends and the offensive line. To me, I just think the defensive line, can they make that next step to be the elite of the elite, what we're so used to what Alabama's had?
All right, most confident in with Alabama. For me, it's pretty easy. It's quarterback. I mean, I'll say this. I don't know if Jalen Milroe can come in and run the entire offense.
The depth is it only strengthens your position in saying that. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think you could come in and run something with Milroe that would be difficult to defend. It would be different, but him being there and Coach Saban, when we spoke to Coach Saban in the spring, he talked to us about the emphasis with Jalen. He's like, we're not letting him do other things. We're forcing him to be a quarterback because we think he can be and we want him to be a quarterback. So I'm anxious to see his development. Not that I think he's going to get in instead of Bryce very often, but
oh boy,
that is a part of why my confidence is as strong as it is with that spot.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, I'm just trying to think of a different one, but it's hard for me to say that that's not their best position group right now. Even if you want to go as far as to Ty Simpson, as a true freshman, you never want a true freshman out there. I don't care what anyone says. Like you can say they might be Trevor Lawrence. Sure, that's great. I don't know. I still don't want a freshman out there. No matter what, I just don't. It's just too hard. Even Bryce, if you talk to anybody associated with the program, granted it was an interesting and unusual year that was 2020. Bryce, had he been forced into a starting role that first year, he would have had some growing pains. You can ask anybody in the program and they would tell you that. Probably would have figured it out by season's end, but there would have been growing pains in the first month, maybe the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season. So, but to have a freshman as your third string guy is a pretty good luxury to have. And Milroe, I think, with what he could contribute, you just reference multiple backs. If the guy's a player, shoot, man, what's the best way to get numbers in the run game?
Yeah.
QB run, man.
Absolutely.
Get a package for him. So he'll be a factor. So I don't really know how you could go at any other position. Like the other position that I'd be real concerned about would be corner. You can tell me all day long that Eli Ricks is God's gift to football. I don't know that. He's not healthy very often. I think Cooley McKinstry is going to be great. I think Kyrie Jackson is going to be solid, pretty good. But he's even, his availability is, you know, not always there either. So if for whatever reason Let's say Eli Ricks gets a little banged up. Maybe Kyrie gets a little bit banged up. Brian Branch can slide out there, but now you're taking away a really good instinctive piece at safety. And they you know, he's a good safety, man. Like, that's a loss if he has to slide out there to corner. Now, whoever fills in his void at safety, he's probably going to be just fine. But I think corner and the fact that that's been a position that was so good for so long, it's just not quite what it was. At least in the last, you know, handful of years when Marlon Humphrey and those guys were, you know, locking down one side of the field and the outside. So it's just a little different now. It can be overcome because they have a great pass rush. That will take some of the pressure off the secondary. But it's still something that I think, if you were to ask the coaching staff, they're really, really trying to make that a priority, that competition, and trying to figure out what the pecking order is going to be.
All right, so let's move on to Texas A&M. In the West, your biggest concern, GMAC, this year with Texas A&M, one thing that is your biggest concern with that football team?
Youth and inconsistency. The thing with Texas A&M is I think they are so talented, supremely talented. At worst, the third best roster in the league. That's at worst, because I think they could make an argument for two. I think you could even in some cases, if a few guys iron out and a few freshmen step up early, man, it wouldn't be shocked if they were, you know, at or atop in a year or two. So that gap's closed significantly from where they were to where they're at now. I think they have a great roster of talent. But I do worry, especially after last year, that team was remarkably inconsistent. And you can pin it down to the quarterback position, but they were inconsistent on defense with a lot of veteran guys. And that doesn't make sense to me. And there were some weeks where they just didn't play good football, and I don't really know why. That and replacing Mike Elko on that side of the ball is not going to be a real easy task. I've really liked DJ Durkin. I know you do too. I think he's a great dude. I think he's a great coach. I think he's multiple. I think his trip to Oxford helped him because he's now morphed and now has added another layer to what he can do defensively and being multiple because he was the Will Muschamp attacking-style defensive coordinator and now has put in his arsenal the Iowa State three-safety drop-eight coverage type of team. So, like, he's done a good job of, I think, adapting to different schemes, and he's going to be, I think, just fine. So I'm not super concerned about that, but I just can't quite figure out why this team had such highs and such lows last year, and it's difficult for me to figure out why those games occurred. Like, if you look at their defense, how they played against Auburn, man, why don't we get that every week? Like, I just don't understand that. That doesn't really make sense to me. And I think that's all part of the maturation process and allowing a program to continue to build. But that's troubling for a team that has legitimate playoff aspirations. So consistency and immaturity is probably my biggest concern right now when it comes to the Aggies.
All right, Damian, your biggest concern for A&M this
quarterback
fall.
Quarterback position. I know Haynes King has won the starting job, but we've seen good Haynes and we've seen just absolutely terrible Haynes. Granted that Zach Calzada played last year due to injury. And if you, again, I'm not a big Max Johnson fan. I didn't like him when he was at LSU. It's just something about him that just doesn't feel right. But I feel as though I understand Jimbo Fisher. He knows the quarterback position. He knows he has high expectations. He knows what he wants out of his quarterback. I just don't think either one of those guys are the ones that's going to push them over the top. If I was the quarterback's coach or anything, I would still be worried about which one was my starter on a consistent basis because they've both shown signs of, you know, inconsistency. So the quarterback position I would be the most concerned about.
All right, I'm going to go a little different direction than you guys here.
Oh, boy.
My biggest concern with Texas A&M, one word, very simple, October.
Oh, boy.
They play in Arlington September 24th. I'm going to kind of bunch that in to the month of October. September 17th is a home game against Miami. After that, they will not play at home again until October the 29th.
You say October, and then you say October, and then you give me two September games. I like it. Let's ride.
Technically, one September game, but similar to when you said
Miami.
Similar to when I said, "Give me one thing about Texas A&M that's your biggest concern." You said youth and inexperience.
Well, so, youth and inexperience are one and the same.
Two things,
obviously.
They will be away from home for over a month. They play Miami September 17th. After that game, there. Neutral site, Arkansas, at Mississippi State, at Alabama, week off at South Carolina, October 29th, they play Ole Miss at home. I mean, that is just, to me, not only being away from home and not being able to take advantage of one of the best home fields in college football for over a month, but then who they play over the course of those games, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Alabama, South Carolina, not only tough teams, but tough venues to go play in. That, I'm just going to be honest with you. I think that could go a long way in preventing Texas A&M from being what they think they can be, what they want to be, and what a lot of the national media believes they will be this upcoming fall. Most confident in Texas A&M. The one thing, one this time, GMAC, thing that you have the most confidence in with Texas A&M this upcoming season.
Their run game, specifically Devon Achane. I think Devon Achane last year, albeit a different role than what he's going to have this year. I think the guy's a dark horse Heisman contender. They have to, obviously, he's going to have to flirt with 2,000 yards, and I don't know if he's going to get the touches to get there, but the guy's got track star speed. He averaged 7 yards a carry last year. He's got crazy home run hitting ability. He can contribute in the passing game. Shoot, last year he was their third leading receiver in yards. So he went on total yardage last year between rushing and receiving. He was over 1,100 yards, 1,150 yards. I'm very confident that he is perfectly capable of stepping into a featured back role. And I think they're going to feature him in a lot of different ways. So I think he's a superstar. And believe that the run game, even in the absence of Isaiah Spiller, actually has more home run hitting potential now. I think they're better this year running the football than they were last year, which I think is in large part due to probably a little bit more cohesive offensive line and a running back that is phenomenal.
All right, so Damian, when you look at Texas A&M, your biggest concern, I'll go ahead and roll in, or biggest strength for Texas A&M for you this year is going to be what?
Oh, yeah. GMAC hit it best. Devon Achane. I mean, you got to look at the number that he wears. So, of course, I expect him to be successful. But like he said, it's just the explosiveness that he has whenever he touches the ball. Like, he's a go-getter. And if you are Texas A&M, you got to find ways to force feed him the ball. Because I think that when you look at what he did, how he changed the – you could look at the Alabama game, a kickoff return. He made his mark rushing, receiving, and then added a kickoff return aspect to that as well. And I just think that for what Texas A&M wants to do and what they expect to do, they're going to have to find ways to get their most explosive player the ball.
They've got explosive capabilities, there's no doubt. I'm going to go offensive line. Layden Robinson, War Daddy. Bryce Foster exceeded all my expectations last year. Reuben Fothery is just an absolute monster. You bring those three back, that's enough for me to have confidence in that group and what they've done. You know how Jimbo's going to place the emphasis on the physicality at the line of scrimmage. So for me, most confidence with Texas A&M. I understand where you guys are going with explosive capability, and I'm completely on board with that, but I'll go offensive line as well. Sidebar from this conversation, Golden Domer wants to chime in on the Bud Light Hotline, 800-239-9569. Domer, what's on your mind?
Top of the morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
How y'all doing?
Great.
Look, first thing I want to say is Texas A&M hasn't been a good football team since Johnny Manziel left, so I just hate to bust that bubble. But
they were 9-1 2 years ago, Domer.
We lost one game.
I mean, they okay, whatever. But for the most part,
not whatever. You said they weren't a good team.
Year in, year out.
No, but you said they weren't a good team since Manziel left.
Okay. Year in, year out. Texas A&M is the most overrated team in college football. I have no idea how they can lose 4 or 5 games every year, and then the very next year, oh, I'll tell you what, they're a dark horse national championship team. Makes no sense. I mean, I just don't understand it. It's every year.
I'm with you going into this year, but I don't feel like they have been 4, 6, 8, 11, 5 preseason in the last 4 or 5 years.
Even last year, everybody hyped them up. Last year, they were hyped up.
But they were 9-1 the year before that, so that made a little bit more sense. I mean, they would have been the next team in the playoff that year.
Yeah, that is valid. I mean, I'm not saying every single year, but I just think that they're dramatically overrated. I don't really understand.
Okay.
Especially the last couple of years. But anyway, get back to your baseball conversation. I'm probably going to make a lot of people upset when I say this, and I'm used to it. You know, it's kind of what I do. But y'all asked if the game in the cornfield was corny, right?
I just stated that I thought the broadcast was. Yes.
Can we just keep it real and just say the entire sport of baseball is corny. All the mannerisms, everything about baseball is corny.
What about
unwritten rules? The sport is so desperate for attendance. They have to give away free fireworks shows just to get people to come to games and free beer. I mean, anything they can
do. Wait. Hold on now.
Where's the free beer?
I need to know.
I'm there.
Look, baseball is, but it's honestly the only people that are fans of baseball are people that grew up playing baseball. It's just like a nostalgia thing. As far as this, if you took somebody who had never played baseball and didn't know anything about baseball and said, hey, come and watch this game with me, they would be like, this is probably the worst event I've ever seen in my life.
But do you know how many people grew up playing baseball?
It's like Notre Dame football.
But you, like you say, the only people that like playing baseball are people that grew up playing baseball. It's like, okay, well,
in other
like
words,
half like our country grew up playing baseball. Right.
playing the sport is not so bad. I played a little baseball growing up, too. But watching it, there's only one thing more boring than watching baseball, and that's talking about baseball. It's so boring that the announcers have to tell stories in the middle of the game just to keep you entertained. I mean, that's how boring baseball is. I mean, honestly, let's just keep it real. Baseball is a terrible professional sport. I mean, it's awful.
Over 3 million kids in the United States play Little League Baseball annually.
Oh, yeah.
As of 2012, so
the
number's gone up.
Have you seen the chains
that
these baseball players are wearing out here? Like, it's pretty gangster.
Listen, there's a lot of it that is listen, I'll be perfectly honest. I was a baseball nerd growing up, and I find it difficult to get through a game now. I think there's a lot of reasons for that, but that doesn't mean that every ounce of it is corny or boring. I mean, there are still you can't tell me when Aaron Judge hits a ball 495 feet that's boring. It's not.
Yeah, well, look, the unwritten rules and all this, you know. Oh, if you hit a home run, you better not look at the pitcher. Don't look at him now. That's a disgrace. That's
I'm fine with it. Throw at him. I don't care.
That's free base for me.
Yeah, kid in minor leagues hit the home run cycle the other day. I don't know how he didn't get hit before he finished that off.
I'm clearly not a baseball fan. But the other thing I want to talk about, y'all are talking about Kentucky, okay? This is the problem that I've got with gauging teams based off of their conference and kind of like money and what they have facility-wise. In all reality, Kentucky is not a football school. It's never been a football school. We've been playing football for 150 years. And if you were telling the story of college football, you wouldn't even remember the name Kentucky unless you're talking about where Bear Bryant left.
That's a big part of the story.
Kentucky is not a football school. They're just lucky that they were close enough to Alabama when the SEC was relevant to get stuck in the conference. Because in reality, they bring nothing to that conference. They get paid, in relation to football, they get paid for nearly no production. And that's why I don't like the whole, it's socialism is what it is. It's not capitalism. We seriously say we care about capitalism. But then we got teams like Vanderbilt and Kentucky getting paid millions and millions of dollars for football when in 150 years, they're nothing but a walking win for most teams that play them. And so,
see, this is what I don't understand about you. Let me stop you right there. This is what I don't understand about you is you talk about all of the how college football used to be great and the great things about college football that we don't talk about and how ESPN's ruining college football and the playoffs ruining college football. And what I have brought up on this show multiple times that frustrates the hell out of me is that we do not celebrate other great things outside of the college football playoff anymore. And you got a team that has been a doormat for a long time and now has won 10 games twice in the last 4 years, should be celebrated for what they've accomplished.
Right.
Yet you say they are completely irrelevant in the history of college football.
You're exactly
so
right.
One
what
part of you is saying we should celebrate that. But this part of you today is saying they should never come out of our mouths.
I'm saying the last 4 years they've had some success. We've been playing football for 150 years. Okay.
Well, Mark Stoops hadn't been there 149 years.
And a lot of their success is due to that paycheck they keep getting. And all those now those nicer facilities they got. And the fact they can afford to pay those coaches. What has Kentucky done to earn that? Nothing. They don't deserve that check CBS gives them or ESPN gives them every year. Nothing. It's socialism. They are getting paid an equal share to Alabama, even though Alabama shaped and formed college football, while Kentucky sat back and did nothing. So that's what I'm trying to say. There's a lot of programs that literally are being built up now, but they didn't earn it or deserve it. And the only reason they do is because they just luckily got put in a conference that's getting paid millions and millions of dollars to artificially enhance their program to making them think that they're something they're not. Kentucky does not deserve 5% of that paycheck they're getting. They don't deserve it. Vanderbilt doesn't deserve it. If you're talking about football, and just football, if you were going to have a draft of programs, honestly, let's just say there was no conferences, and you were just going to pick schools, Kentucky would maybe wait, what? Maybe 100? 100, maybe?
I mean, I don't think they'd be that low.
I don't keep a running list.
So, in other words, it's just like, all right, Duke is a basketball school. It's just a fact. You could bring up, oh, Steve Spurrier won the conference. Well, okay, who cares? If you look at Duke, if we're saying that football is really what matters, it's the moneymaker, it's what's relevant when conference alignment, all this other kind of stuff. Kentucky's just lucky the SEC don't send them a letter and say bye. In all reality, because they don't bring nothing to the table. If SEC dropped Kentucky, who's going to go pick them up? Does the Big Ten want them? Nope. Hell, I don't think the Pac-12 would want them.
But you're not getting them.
They're irrelevant.
But you're getting, you're just saying in football.
Yes, I'm just, that's, we keep.
But nobody's going to be just, I mean, your team is the only team that tries to go play in a conference as a non-member of that conference in just football. Like, nobody else tries to do that.
Because they're a capitalist. They believe in capitalism, Cole.
Not everything when it comes to playing Kentucky, because I think they're dodging them. They've never played them. I think Notre Dame's scared to play Kentucky in football.
Look, think about this. Everybody gives Notre Dame a hard time. Most people from the South claim to hate socialism and love capitalism. Everything Notre Dame gets is based off what they've earned. They built this brand. They won those games.
Brick
they
by brick.
Sit back and wait for, they brick don't by sit back brick. And wait for nobody
that's what I'm talking
to
about.
Hand them a paycheck, okay? It's conference of socialism. That's all it is. Everybody gets paid equal amount no matter what you do. Am I wrong on that or right?
You are correct, but there are other ways for teams
I'm
who have more success.
So I don't know. I'm feeling offended.
There are other ways for teams who have more success to gain more money. Like Alabama gets big checks for those neutral site games. No matter if Notre Dame may have built the college football city, but the teams who have more success get a different share of certain revenue, so they're obviously going to make more money.
Like, I'm trying to figure out.
My response would be get into a better conference.
Why does this bother you? Why does this bother you?
Okay, let me tell you why it bothers me, Greg. Because teams, in my opinion, should get what they've earned. And I find it funny when programs like Kentucky, okay, sit back and beat their chest and act like they're something, when in reality, the only reason they're even relevant to college football at all is because they're in the SEC. The SEC makes Kentucky. Kentucky don't make the SEC. So the reason it bothers me is in the relation of football, when Alabama plays Kentucky, we're going to act like that's a big deal. In reality, it's not. It's no different than when Michigan plays Purdue. Kentucky is not even Purdue. Okay, they're not. Kentucky, if I had to relate them to somebody, Tulane has more college football tradition and accomplishment than Kentucky.
But you realize if you played this game, then Colgate and Princeton,
the University of Chicago,
they're going to have more recognition historically than some of the teams you're bringing up.
Say that again.
If you're going to play this game, then teams like Colgate and Harvard and Princeton are going to have more notoriety over time than some of the teams you're talking about today. So you can't just say because certain teams did something 50, 100, 200 years ago that all of a sudden they're a better brand right now than all these other teams.
I'm not talking about 50 or 100 years ago, Cole.
You're telling me
you
Purdue.
You just said 150 years.
You're telling me Purdue right now is a better football brand than Kentucky. Right now, right this very second.
Kentucky out of the SEC. The SEC makes Kentucky.
That's not what you said, though. You said that Purdue is a better football brand than Kentucky right now. And that's false. That's not true.
No, no.
Okay.
No.
Look at the freaking attendance at the games.
No, I can tell you top 10 matchups. Wait a second. I can tell you top 10, top 5.
I don't need to see what Drew Brees did in 99. I don't care about Vinny Sutherland catching the ball in 97. That's
Gary Danielson.
For right now. Right now.
Look, you don't care about that, Cole, but you care about Kentucky winning the East when everybody knows the East is a laughingstock of college football.
The SEC East just won the national championship,
Georgia,
buddy.
It's been Georgia and a bunch of bums, but they get credit. They get credit because they're in the SEC. The almighty SEC, where it just means more. And we're just dominant, even though we only win 50% of our games versus Power 5. We're dominant. So all I'm saying is Kentucky is a basketball school. They have never done anything. If you wrote the story of college football, you would not mention the name Kentucky. And if you can't accept that and you think they're good now because they got facilities and they got
coaches. Where'd Bear Bryant, where was he a head coach at?
That's what I'm saying. That's the only time you would bring them up.
Well, that's the time I just brought it up.
The history of college football.
Where did one of the greatest centers in NFL history play ball? Dermonte Dawson.
Who?
Look,
Dermoni Dawson.
Now that's a bad example. I'm not on board with that. No one knows who that is.
This is all I'm trying to say, guys.
Three offensive linemen ever: Larry Allen, Orlando Pace, and Tyron Smith. Those are the only three offensive linemen that have ever played.
Disrespectful to Quentin Nelson.
You know this. The best thing that ever happened to Kentucky was the fact that they just got grandfathered in to a conference where Southerners live and we're obsessed with college football, including me. Even though I'm a Notre Dame fan, I'm obsessed with college football just like y'all because I'm a Southerner, born and raised, and was an Alabama fan until I was 12, okay? That's the best thing ever happened to them, because if it was not for the association with the SEC, they are meaningless.
But what is everyone else? Like, you could say that about every school. Like, okay, because Notre Dame has been able to live in independent land and has been very, very, very good and relevant for a long time, like, every single school in the SEC at one time or another has benefited from their association with the SEC. You know who stunk forever? Florida. So they were buoyed up by being in the SEC. Alabama, throughout my childhood, was a complete and utter disgrace of itself. In the late 90s or in the early 2000s, and like, but now they were buoyed up by the SEC, and now they are basically carrying the SEC in some ways. Georgia has had times of mediocrity.
Let me give you a history lesson real quick on Alabama. Alabama has carried the SEC in its entirety, always. In the 60s, when Bear Bryant was there, the SEC was barely Pac-12.
What about the 80s?
See, that's the thing though. Even when a team is not good, doesn't mean they're not still the face of that program. Notre Dame hasn't done anything in 40 years, but people are still begging to have them. Alabama is and all, has always been. It's always been Alabama and Tennessee. Everybody else in the SEC was not relevant to college football for the most part until like the 90s. I'm just being honest with you. Not
so was LSU benefited by being in the SEC in the 90s?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Alabama's
the only school. Alabama is the only school that has carried the SEC. All I'm sitting here trying to say is there's a lot of these schools that are associated with these conferences, and they're getting a check. And they're just lucky. If people really want to start carrying it, these conferences are getting greedy. All right, we all admit that, right?
Oh,
they're getting really greedy, and they're really thinking about money, right? What's going to happen when the conferences start getting rid of teams? When they start saying thanks but no thanks?
I don't think they will.
You don't bring any money with football.
I don't think they will. SEC. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I hate to tell you, SEC wouldn't lose no sleep if Kentucky walked out now.
Domer, I hate to tell you that two 10-win seasons in the last 4 years for Mark Stoops, how many 10-win seasons do you think there are in the history of Purdue football?
If I had to make a guess, well, considering the fact back when Kentucky Purdue
just answer the question.
Just answer the question. Let's say Joe Tiller had one when they went to the Rose Bowl in 19.
Well,
whatever.
I would also put an asterisk on that because I don't think Purdue plays two FCS schools on a regular basis. Kentucky does. And I would also say back when Purdue was good, they probably only played like 10 games.
Oh, my God.
I'll help you out. Joe Tiller went to the Rose Bowl at 8-4, by the way. Purdue has one 10-win season in the history of their program. One. Uno. Single.
Okay, well, I got one. Let's ride.
One.
Hey-o.
10-win season in the history of their entire
Those Purdue helmets with the rose through the P was fire, though.
Sweet. 8-4.
I think they're the best program in Indiana. What do you think about that, Domer?
No. let's not.
Butler has something to say about that. All right, back with more Mac and Cube next. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning, 9:39 a.m. Friday, August 12th, right here on Jocks 94.5.
Tired of waiting weeks for dental care when needed on your schedule, or worse, you have a dental emergency, can't get immediate help? Well, that's why we have our friends at Family Care Dental. They're the urgent care office where you can be seen the same day. Three locations, Hoover, Fultondale, and Homewood, accepting patients of all ages for emergencies or routine dental appointments. Most insurance plans are accepted, and they can see you on Fridays and Saturdays. Family Care Dental, 874-9605. That's 874-9605.
Nate is in Michigan, wants to talk Kentucky on the Bud Light Hotline. Welcome in, Nate.
Hey, guys, good to talk to you again. I just couldn't help but overhear that conversation about Notre Dame and Kentucky, and I find it laughable. You know, Kentucky has been good the last few years, and, you know, the SEC built them or whatever because of the money. You know, Notre Dame built their brand when they were the only ones who could afford to give anybody who could tie shoes a scholarship, and, you know, there were no black kids playing. So, I mean, you know, give me a break with all the help Kentucky's got. And I'm 37 years old, And I've lived, you know, I grew up about a half hour from Notre Dame. I own a business there now. And, you know, what have they done in the 37 years that they would be such a great brand? They've had four or five good teams. Like, good for them. Like, that's not that impressive. So, you know, they can miss me with all the historical greatness, and they deserve whatever because they've built their own brand. Like, they had plenty of help themselves. So that's really, you know, I just couldn't let that go.
Well, appreciate the call, Nate. Great stuff as always. Listen, you won 10 games five straight years. You went to a couple of college football playoffs. I'm not going to say they haven't done anything the last few years. It's been impressive. But to go back 175 years and say that Kentucky can't be viewed as a relevant college football team because they didn't do things then, I don't think is going to be a valid argument as far as how we're going to discuss college football here on the show. We'll come back, get to more of our confidence points, more of our concerns with certain teams inside the SEC next on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Thought you had a perfect opportunity to bring us back to Bad About It right there, but this song is not Bad About It. 9:46 a.m. It is Friday, August 12th, right here on Jocks 94.5.
Planning a move? We need to call our friends at Crocker Moving Services.
They're move a local away from company. This song.
Local company owned by Iraq War veteran Eric Crocker. Crocker believes in hiring movers you can trust. Complete full background checks, run drug tests on every single employee. These are good guys, and you can trust them in your home. Whether it's a move across country, want to come rearrange the living room, they'll do everything in between. These are the guys that you want to trust and rely on. Go online, visit them at CrockerMovingServices.com. That's CrockerMovingServices.com. Support your veterans by choosing Crocker Moving Services for your next move.
All right, so we were discussing certain teams in college football, specifically the SEC, and what our biggest concern is and maybe where we have the most confidence in those teams. I want to go from Texas A&M to Arkansas. Your biggest concern for the Hogs this upcoming season, GMAC?
Probably being able to replace the front three defensively. Last year with Utsi and Williams and Ridgeway, that was a disruptive group, and they will not... I think they will not be able to easily be replaced. Not that they don't have talent. They do. They have plenty of pieces. They have plenty of good players. But I do have concerns about their ability to be able to get that done. So that's probably my biggest position group, knowing they lost all three of the guys that I considered to be difference makers last year. That's not an easy thing to overcome.
Biggest concern for me, can I go copycat with A&M and just say October again? Alabama, at Mississippi State, at BYU, at Auburn in October. That is filthy.
Tough
when
one.
You're talking about the schedule for the Hogs. But I would narrow yours down if I were to go on the field. I would just say nose guard. You mentioned John Ridgeway, John Richardson 2 years ago. Those players have been fantastic for Barry Odom's defense. They got to have a guy right there. And if Isaiah Nichols is not that guy, I think it forces him to be very different on defense and most likely not be as successful. Damian, biggest concern for the Hogs?
A receiver position. Who's KJ Jefferson going to be able to throw it to? When all else fails, he could throw it to 16 last year.
You haven't heard the folk hero stories of Matt Landers in practice? By the Landers? Way, who has a bigger year? Matt Landers or Brew McCoy? The biggest college football folktale stories like with which mythical unicorn receiver has the bigger year? Matt Landers or Brew McCoy?
I mean, we've been saying Matt Landers is going to be Calvin Johnson for like 6 years.
For a while. Like for a while. Like the name is so strong.
Oh, yeah.
So strong. But
oh, yeah.
Hadn't seen the tape just yet. But it's got to be receiver position.
All right. Most confidence, GMAC. Where do you feel best about the Hogs?
Their run game. I think they're going to be able to run the ball. I think even if you take into account KJ Jefferson's legs as well, I think they're going to be in great shape with their stable of backs that complement each other and being able to create different looks out of those multiple formations in the backfield. I think will be really difficult to defend.
All right, one more for me is a little bit weird. I'm going to go coaching staff. The fact you kept those two coordinators and Sam Pittman's there directing it, that's where I have the most confidence in Arkansas. The fact that you have Kendall Briles, which, by the way, I saw on a very popular college football website yesterday, a list of the top 25 coordinators in college football, and Kendall Briles was not on the list.
Yeah.
You know what I will never do again? Visit that website.
Oh, boy.
The guy who wrote that article should quit his job immediately.
Immediately.
You have no idea what you're doing. Sir.
Stop.
Stop.
Kind
right now.
Sir.
Greg. So, I would go coaching staff there. Let's go to Auburn, try to knock that one out quickly before we have to get out for today. We can finish some of these up on Monday. Where is your biggest concern with the Auburn Tigers this upcoming season?
Protection. I think as much as anything else, and if you need protection at your house, you need to call our friends at Yellowhammer Roofing, because the first line of protection at your home is your roof. That's why I use Yellowhammer Roofing, and that's why I know that my loved ones are safe. Whether it's a roof replacement or repair, Yellowhammer Roofing is the hometown professional team. Call or visit them today for a free assessment, 855-217-8887, or go online at yellowhammerroofing.com. It's protection. You have two quarterbacks that are not outrageously mobile, and we know you're going to be able to run the football. That's huge. But if you get into a pass-first situation and obvious passing downs, can the offensive line hold up in protection? I think that is a legitimate concern, especially knowing that they don't have Bo Nix in the backfield. And Bo Nix, for all his flaws, he was pretty dang good at escaping and buying time. So that would be something that I'd be a little concerned about.
I'm going to go receiver. I still just don't know exactly how Landon King's going to work moving outside. Yes, Shedrick Jackson, Javarius Johnson, they're getting a lot of buzz through fall camp. We just haven't seen any receivers on this team, not including Shanker, because he's been fairly productive, but I'm talking receivers, go out and be productive. Take over games. Be the number one target. That, to me, is the biggest concern for this Auburn team, Damian.
Yep, pitter-patter right off that, the receiver position. We don't, you know, last year, Coach Harsin always talked about explosives, and to be honest, we still haven't seen a guy just, or a couple of guys just go out there and just continuously and consistently make explosive plays. So that's one of the bigger concerns going into this season for sure.
Most confident, Greg, for the Auburn Tigers?
Run game. I mean, running backs, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say specifically running backs for me.
Specifically running backs, because it's run game for other teams because, you know, but these are superstars. I think Hunter is too. We know Tank is. That goes without saying. But I think Hunter's versatility makes him really interesting. And if he gets opportunities, I think, to contribute alongside Tank in the backfield, where maybe one's in protection, one releases out into the flats. One's in protection, and one maybe is on a jet sweep around the edge. Like, I think that the way that you can use those guys simultaneously will make each one better when they share the backfield alongside whoever the quarterback is.
All right, so let's get to our Super Sofa Game of the Weekend. We give it to you every Friday, and it's brought to you by our friends at TD's Fine Furniture in Summerton. You guys may have seen the photograph on Twitter or Instagram. We've got a new super sofa in our office thanks to our friends at TD's Fine Furniture. That's where we're going to grind on tape, watch film, and even might get a couple of Super Sofa Game of the Weekends right there. They've got a football field-sized warehouse. They buy by the truckload at closeout prices, and they pass those savings on to you with discounts throughout the store. Sofas, recliners, dining room, bedroom furniture, and more. 12 months, no interest at TD's Fine Furniture in Sermonton. My Super Sofa Game of the Weekend, Saturday. It's going to be NFL preseason. Don't give me all this other stuff that's happening right now. It's real tackle football, even though it doesn't count. Seattle at Pittsburgh, 6 p.m. on the NFL Network. They tell me that this Trubisky kid is looking good in camp.
Trubisky.
I ain't buying it, but I'm just telling you know what the people are telling me.
Gotcha.
The folks are saying the conversation is that Trubisky looks good.
All right.
I have no expectations for that side of the ball this year. I know the defense will be fine, but I feel like it's going to be wasted again. But my Super Sofa Game of the Weekend, G-Max, Seattle at Pittsburgh, NFL preseason, 6 o'clock Saturday, NFL Network.
Yeah, my Super Sofa Game of the Week.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry. At Chris Kreisger Stadium.
We'll go
like
with that.
My Acrisire Super Stadium? I don't know. We'll go I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Mine's Packers 49ers. Similar situation. I want to see what Trey Lance is all about, man. Like, they're putting a lot on this kid's shoulders. They just got rid of a guy that took them to the Super Bowl.
Like, but, Greg, you saw the one throw in practice, right?
Well, duh.
I also saw the throw.
I saw the throw in practice.
All it takes is one. Don't forget that. ain't as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. Like, hey, I tell you what, anyone can make that one throw. But Trey Lance, I want to see, you know, I just want to see him operate the offense. I mean, they're putting a lot on this kid's shoulders, man. I think he's the real deal. I do. They must see something in practice that's phenomenal, and I hope we get a chance to see it tomorrow night.
I saw it, the one throw. Damian?
Hey, Lions, Falcons. Battle of the of the elite at quarterback. Marcus Mariota versus Jared Goff for a series.
Yes, Grace. You're going to need a sofa to sit on watching that crap. It's going to take right now.
We know, Damian, we know we're going to be for hate. 15 minutes when Mariota goes three and out, and inevitably they punt it away.
Give me an extended sofa so I can fall asleep watching that game.
Yeah, be a pullout.
Yeah. I do want to see Tyler Allgeier for the Falcons, though. See him run the ball. TD's Fine Furniture is where you get your super sofa. football size warehouse, closeout prices, sofas, recliners, dining room, bedroom furniture, and more. 12 months, no interest at TD's Fine Furniture in Summerton. Appreciate Fred Siegel joining us today. John Parker Wilson today. Get your podcast, jocksfm.com. We're back Monday. Three-man front is next.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.